Hello and welcome to ADHD Mums. In this podcast, we tackle the tough, often unspoken realities of motherhood, neurodiversity, and mental health. Today, we are unpacking the collapse around internalizing children. And we have Bronnie Hammond-Vail back again. How are you, Bronnie?
I'm really good. Thank you so much for welcoming me back.
Bronnie is an autistic and ADHDer. She was diagnosed late at 35 and she's worked across multiple education systems. She gets the parent experience and the teacher experience. And Bronnie, I'm so glad you're back for this one.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
Two questions, okay. Two different points of view. If you were listening to this episode and the teacher is saying, would love to help out, let's say great intentions, but they don't know what the child needs, and they are saying, let me know, and I'm more than happy to do it. What could that mum ask for the teacher? Yeah. Other side, teacher, if you are listening and have internalizers, have parents who email, they look fine, they say they're fine, check in with them, ask them what they need, don't know what else I'm supposed to do. What are some things that you think work as a general rule?
Okay, I'm going to start with the teacher perspective. As a general rule, in your classroom with an internalizing child, male or female, or non-binary, all three, don't call on the child to answer questions verbally in front of the whole class. So you don't need to confirm knowledge that way. So even if they actively put their hand up, great, but don't point out like you might do. If an internalizing child says, hey, miss, can I please go, or hey, sir, can I go to the bathroom? My suggestion to you is to allow them to. That could be a moment that they are using to re-regulate themselves by splashing some cold water or getting a drink. You don't stop them, but allow them to have that moment where they may need to themselves regulate. And they may not even realize that that's what they're doing, removing themselves for 10 minutes and coming back.
So you're saying like treat them differently to an externalizer that you think they might be going out to run away.
My daughter will go to the toilet and she will go because she goes, I just need 5 minutes to myself to slow my brain down and then I'm going to come back in. And I fundamentally disagree with the bathroom rules, but that's a different thing. If a child says to you and they've come through and they're an internalizing child and they say, hey, Ms., and these are just some, you can pick what you want as a teacher from them. You can extrapolate information. But if a student comes and goes, Miss, I didn't get to eat lunch today because I had to do a detention or I had to go and do band practice or something. Can I please have my lunch? Sadly, I have seen many, and that's them expressing right now, I haven't eaten, I'm hungry and I need to concentrate, but I also need to eat, feel a need. I have sadly seen where a lot of people will go, no, you're not allowed to, it's the school rule. You ignore that and you say, yes, can you sit quietly at your desk while we're doing the work and fulfill that need that you have shared with me and do that. Let them. If they are playing with something in their hands, allow them to be playing with the thing. Is it causing noise? Is it causing distraction? No? Then don't say, hey, you shouldn't be playing with that. These are just little things. I teach very differently as a teacher. Some of the rules and things like that, I ignore because I have seen and worked differently. I have to eat in classroom. I have an issue with my blood sugar. If I am sitting there and eating in the classroom and I have a student say, well, why do you get to eat? Very good question, Johnny. Would you like to eat the rest of your crackers? As long as you clean up, then off we go. And I have had really good experiences as a casual where I have done that when it's against the school rule. But the thing is, I lead by example. I'm a teacher. I lead by example. And so little things like that, they are expressing a need. Any student says to you, like, hey, could I do this? Don't look at it as an inconvenience. Look at it as, are they saying something to me that I'm missing? Does that make sense? Particularly if the parent has already expressed in advance that they're an internalizer, if that makes sense.
Oh, no, I completely agree. It's funny. I have one of my boys came home the other day and there's a child in their class that has some individual plans. I have differences around what they get.
Yes.
And what my son gets.
Yep.
And where did the social justice warrior come from? Yes. Like me, right? Yep. So it even says in his school report, he has a sense of satisfaction when things are fair.
I love that.
Except he likes to point out that it's not fair that someone else gets to do something that he doesn't.
Yeah.
And he can't comprehend that.
Yep.
Because he's six.
Yep.
And he's like, but why do they get to sit on that chair? Why do they get to go out and do some running? I want to do that too and I didn't get to.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to read the book either. Like he comes home pissed off. And I've had to really talk to him about, you know what fair is? Fair is everyone getting what they need.
Equitable.
Fair is not about everybody getting the same thing.
Yep.
because there's kids in his class that have got diabetes.
Yep. And they have their diabetes. They have their popper on the table. Exactly. You've got to let them know their sugars.
Exactly. Yep. I said to him, have you ever seen a teacher give a kid a jelly bean? And he's like, oh, well, you know, blah, 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 gets it all the time. And I was like, probably because they have diabetes.
Yeah. And they'll die.
You know, so, yes. You know, we probably should.
Yeah.
But sometimes there's a conversation, I love the way you've said that, that around what is fair? Because I'm not a teacher. I would imagine managing a room full of questions about, well, why do you get to eat your crackers?
Yeah.
And why does that person get to do that? Why does that person get to do that? But that would be tricky to answer. Also, but maybe the conversation has to be there.
I think the conversation does. I don't really want to have to tell my students, I'm sorry, I have diabetes and I have issues with blood sugar and stuff. This is why I have a can of Coke and things like that. I don't want to have to tell them that. But I also believe that I am leading by example. The same with having my mobile phone out. I do not have it out in class because I'm leading by example. The rule in Queensland State Schools is it is often away. Then I don't have mine off, but it's definitely away. But if I'm sitting there and a student says to me, well, miss, why do you get to eat? Yeah, that's a really good question, Johnny. Why do I get to eat? Would you like to eat? And as long as it is not being disrespectful, and this is where I think that schools as a whole really need to change an element of their management. If a school as a whole is saying, well, you can't eat in class and you can't go to the bathroom between periods, that's a whole other thing I need to deal with. But then as a teacher, and also the rigidity, if that's a school rule, fine, but I'm in the classroom in that moment, I should have the right as a teacher to manage the class myself. So if I am seeing that they would like to have a snack while they do their work and I am not seeing bad behaviour or, and I hate saying that word, but behaviour that is opposite to the code of conduct, then what's the harm in letting them do it and joining in with me? Because it creates an element of, miss is pretty fair. So when I do have to go, hey, I'm really not happy with your level of behaviour today, can we talk about it? Because according to the code of conduct, I would have to give you a detention. I don't really want to do that. Can we talk about it? Was there something I missed? That, you know, and sometimes, yeah, a student is just doing it because their friend is rabbing them up, fine. But I can almost say with authority, 98% of the time, it is for other external reasons. Mom and dad might be getting a divorce and it's affecting them. Big brother's gone to hospital. Little brother is really unwell. Like, that's kind of what I say. I see children as a whole picture. I like to see them as a whole picture, that they have lives outside of here that can impact their learning. And we as teachers need to take that on. So my best advice for a teacher who is wanting to engage with a parent, I would just be, and I'm going to expand it a bit more. If you are wanting to do something for another student and you think it would be beneficial, particularly if they're internalizing, and there is a way that you can do it for your whole class and it would be beneficial, do it. Just naturally do it. Don't make it a formal thing. Just do it. So like the eating or the allowing them to sit on the floor or cross-legged. As you see, I sit here and I have to be cross-legged. I hate sitting on chairs. And there have been occasions where I have sat on a table and the students have gone, what the hell's Miss doing? But it makes me comfortable. So with the parent, I would say this. If you are noticing things at home that you know help your daughter, for example, being able to have a snack that is particularly helpful to regulate, or that they need time to process an instruction that you've given them, these are things that you can include for your internalizing child. So things that you find helpful at home in some capacity will be helpful at school. I guarantee it. It may not look the same, but it will be the same. So I would be suggesting, hey, this is what I do at home. Take what you want, extrapolate what you want, turn it into the process for the school and use it. And 9 times out of 10, almost everything you suggest will be usable in some way within the classroom.
Can you give me examples?
Okay, so my daughter, she has fidget toys, right? And I know that at home when she's overwhelmed, particularly if her brother is having quite a bad PTSD outburst, she gets those fidget toys and she will squeeze them and squeeze them and squeeze them and like just does it that way. So I know like when she started in year 7 this year, I had to say to her teachers, I emailed them all individually, hey, and she does have a learning plan, but I wanted to remind them, hey, she needs these fidget toys. If she's feeling overwhelmed or things have happened at home that she's now only just processing, let her use the fidget toys. Let her get them out of the bag. Use them. You don't have to supply them. I'll supply them. But that's one way. Another way could be allowing the student to, so I've already said about not calling on kids. Also, a parent can say that. If you know that your child at home doesn't really like being called on in front of guests to answer something like, hey, how's it going? You know, you did this at Stepford. They might not like that. then that is going to go across into school. They may not like to be called upon by the teacher. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So don't call upon them in the classroom. So that could be another suggestion you can make. All of it, everything that you as a parent do instinctively and naturally, it does take time to think about. So please hear me. I understand that. But slowly start to see, what am I doing to make my kid comfortable at home? Particularly if you're a neurodiverse household, it happens naturally. So you really have to think about it. So maybe have a friend who's neurotypical. Maybe they can see some of the things you do, or a doctor might be able to suggest some of the things you're doing. But extrapolate that information or provide it in a document to a teacher. And if the teacher is worth their weight in gold, which some of them are, they will be able to go, I can pull this part out and do something in my classroom.
I love that. I think one thing that you said that is really a goal, I think, for me in my parenting anyway, is to be able to have a child that can recognize they are starting to feel not very good and they remove themselves. Yep. Like, you've talked about that a few times. And it can be really tricky because as a parent, we don't want to put our mental health onto our child.
Last episode,
I talked about
the Ed Sheeran concert.
And when I talked with my daughter at the concert, I don't want to make her feel guilty, like, you're so lucky to have me here. You need to support me and be my carer, right?
No.
But there's also an element of, you know what, this is a really tricky day for me because I find all of these things very difficult.
Yeah.
What can I do to calm myself down in this situation?
Yeah.
And don't you fucking love this.
Hindsight's amazing.
Because for my three children, I had everything organized for them, what they would need if they were overwhelmed. I didn't have shit for me, did I?
Yeah.
So really what I should have had is had my Loop earpiece. I should have had my headphones. I should have, for example, asked my husband, who would have done it for me, to go and get all the food in the food court and all the things.
Yeah, so I have, and this has taken many years, I didn't even realize I was doing it, having children with complex needs like my middle child has, and I have had to realize that there is nothing wrong with, and again, you're right, you don't put your mental health on that child, on any child. It's not. But it models behavior when you can say to your child, and even as a teacher, this all applies to every human being. If you can model the behavior and go, hey, I'm sorry, I wasn't myself because this, I should have done this, or, you know, it actually is impactful. And I can give you a really good way I know this. My daughter knows that if I'm having a particularly hard day and I start to shut down, as in like her brothers aren't home yet and I've had a hard day for whatever reason, she can tell. She naturally will go and get a can of Coke from the fridge, and she will just come and put it, and she knows the signs because she's just seen me enough. Like, and she puts it beside the bath and she'll just walk out. That's her going, hey mom, you need to go and take care of yourself. And see, I do the same for her. When I'm seeing that she's dysregulated, I do these silent, subtle things that as parents, we all do. And so she has learned that and this is the really beautiful thing about neurodivergent children. There is a saying that they only look internally. They don't see. That is absolute
bullshit.
This kid, he knows when, like, he knows. If I've had a really bad day and I haven't let anybody know, he knows. He will come up and just give me a random hug. And this kid, you know, and he doesn't hug like normal people where you put your arms around. He does a special hug where you hug him, sort of thing. But on those days when I am really struggling, he will walk up to me and he will give me that proper hug. And he knows. So kids are observant. So you've also got to take care of you. Your children see this, and that also happens within. And it also teaches them that they can tell the teacher. And if you have a teacher who is worth their weight in gold, they will see that. But I think, and I could go on forever about what us as teachers we need to be doing. But fundamentally, the education system does need to change. There needs to be more, and I learnt this fundamentally from a social worker. I'm going to give her a little shout. Her name's Jess. She taught me that relationship is the fundamental thing. I will get more from my students through how I am with them develop. And it doesn't mean I have to tell them every little thing about my life. No, that's not it. It's being honest. It is being upfront, and it is making sure that I'm not saying one thing and then doing the other. That is a key thing. And then I'm seeing that in teachers, I am seeing that they'll say one thing and do it for this kid, but then they'll go and do another for another kid. And if you're a neurodivergent child, like you're saying, you will see that as unjust. So if you are doing something that can be for all children in your class, then do it. It doesn't need to be one special thing. If you know that children sometimes work better sitting on the floor for a day, give them an option. Can they sit at the table? Can they sit at the floor? Can they lay on a beanbag? As long as the work is getting done, how does it matter how it's being done?
Oh, I love that. I just thought of something that you were talking about, how as a parent, what you're doing at home can be modeled at school. And I was trying to figure out how we would apply that. And I just had this struck with this example that when in the school holidays, I have one child that if he is not on board with the plan, I'm not going to have a really hard day. And I usually flag that with the teacher, like, you really need to connect with him in some way because he can be very tricky for you and he's also incredibly clever. So it's kind of the one that you don't want to upset because he'll make really life difficult for you and you won't even really know it, but he's really good at figuring out what upsets people and he'll line up others to do it for him. You won't even know it's him.
Sounds like my brother, just quietly.
So when in the school holidays, I know that if I do not have a two-minute conversation with him at the beginning of the day about what we're going to do, shit's going to be hard, even if I'm doing everything he wants. And so I was just thinking then, I know in my parenting, it can take me 30 seconds to get him on board really quick. But if he's not on board, oh, my God, it's awful. I was just thinking, and I rarely ask for anything for him, because I was trying to figure out how to say, how to build a relationship in a way that a teacher could do it quickly. But actually, getting him on board with the plan is probably the best 30 seconds that she will spend in her day, because she won't even know that he's the perpetrator.
Exactly.
So I really thought that what you said there was really important. Is there anything finally that you'd like to share before we finish up?
So the thing I want to share is, you're a neurodivergent parent and you are sitting in the midst of school refusal and school frustration and a feeling that you are unheard of. Hear me when I say this. I hear you. There are teachers that hear you. There are teachers that are trying fundamentally to get help for your child. I promise you. And what you are seeing, what looks like a rejection or not trying hard enough, and I'm talking at the bottom level here, the higher we get, okay, I can agree with you, that's happening. But for the most part, teachers are trying. And I want to say this, there are teachers inside the system. I was inside the system. I now work outside of the system, but I'm still fighting the system to get change. There are teachers who are fighting for your kids, okay? And if you find them, they're worth their weight in gold, absolutely. But please don't feel, hearing some of the stuff I've said today, please don't feel that it's all doom and gloom. I promise you that one day, hopefully, your child will come across that one teacher and that one teacher will change everything. I have seen it. I have been that teacher. I have had that teacher. I have seen my brother have that teacher. And it takes one, and that's the really crappy thing. So if you're a parent and you are struggling and you are fighting to get change for your child, keep fighting. And if you have the mental ability to go a little bit further, let's start change. We have to change the educational system. So
when we talk about change, what can we do?
Okay, so there's a few things that you can do. Let's go the small level in the classroom. Engage with the teacher, understand that they may come across hostile. I'm praying that they're not meaning that. Just keep going. But what it is, if you are having issues with teachers not engaging with a plan properly, and again, always document. I know you're all doing this anyway, but always document. Making sure you are making the right reports to the regional offices in your education, in your school. Nothing is going to change unless the schools and the government have data. So this is the thing, nothing will change unless they have data. So we're good at it, start making some noise. So if you are fundamentally seeing that the school is failing your child and you need to use that, and I know that you're probably going to go, well, nothing will come of it. You're right. Nothing will probably come of it at that moment. But the more reports that are getting done to the regional offices and complaints and getting internal reviews in the school will mean that the data is being developed. And we are starting to see change. Start making noise. If you want it to change, you have to make the noise. I'm sorry, because if I am genuinely trying to change the education system, as you said at the beginning, I helped open a school and I have fundamentally seen it happen and it can be done. That was a small scale. So that was them. We now need to make it bigger. And so you have to make the noise to get it bigger. And we just have to keep doing that. And so without the data, without the complaints, without the documented things, we aren't going to get there. And I know that is a mental load that you don't want to have to do. So if you have the ability, you need to try. If you have it, if you've got that extra time, please, I'm encouraging you to do it. Because the more we have, it may not change this time for your child, but it will for later. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do. I love it. I love to complain.
Yeah.
I think a lot of parents on this podcast, yes, they're probably going to have some complaints that they could put through to regional office. I'm sure they do. What if you don't have a specific complaint at the moment, but you want to see change, or you've had one before, but you're at a new school? Is there anything we can do? Because everybody listening are going to be listening thinking, I need change for my child. Or let's say they're homeschooling.
Oh, yeah.
So
big one.
Then, yes, I agree. Complain. And I'm going to make a template for a regional office complaint. I'm going to put that into the show notes. I don't know when I'm going to do it. I'm going to fucking do it, right?
Yeah.
Yes, that's done. But if you don't have a specific complaint today,
yeah,
or you're homeschooling, or you've been forced out, whatever it is,
yeah,
is there anything else we can do? I made a change petition in the last school series.
Yeah.
Everybody signed it. It didn't go shit.
Yeah, so this is the thing. It takes one person in public office to help make that change. So we've just got to identify who that person is. Do you know what I'm saying?
But it's a big change, though.
It is. It is. And that's why I said it's not going to be probably in this generation of children at school.
What about then? What do you think pushes change? Do you think it takes a politician wanting to get in, right, to champion a change in the education system? Like, I'm thinking, what does it take?
Yeah.
Because someone's going to have to put a lot of time and energy and money and fucking hammer this thing. Mm. And I'm not confident that any politician is going to do that because they believe in it.
Mm.
I'm wondering who would take this all the way that actually, and they might only be doing it to get in. Who gives a shit why they're doing it?
As long as they do it.
But how can we get someone to pick it up and fucking do it?
I know I'm going to be honest. I'm not sure. But I did used to say I wanted to be in politics because I want to make change for education and particularly around disability education. I have withdrawn that thought process because I don't think I would cope with, and I said this to you before, I wouldn't fix my face for certain things because I would get frustrated. And to me, I see it as, this is logical, why aren't we doing it? And so I think really you are right though. We do need a politician, and I don't care if it's because we want to get in, fine. But they need to run with it, and they need the data to back them up. They need the research to back them up. So we know that the school system has changed how we do it. There are a number of schools that have opened across all of Australia. I can think of a number of them. I can think of one in the Moreton Bay area that can show that data. And we need to change how we see school. So we have a teacher, right? And we have teacher's aides. How about we start having actual social workers in the classroom? Like this, that's one change that the government could easily do like that, and that would have a profound impact on the education system because we need to stop seeing schooling and children as just education, home life. They are not. Children are multifaceted beings and they are impacted by everything. So if their home life is difficult and they haven't got support there, like a social worker may be able to do, then their schooling is going to suffer. They're struggling also because they're having their neurodivergent and things like that. So you need to look at it, I guess, as a bigger picture. And I'm not saying one social worker at a school, because I literally had a principal the other day say the wait list is huge. And I was like, what's the point of offering it if the wait? But that is one, things like that. And so stop seeing schooling. So please, ladies or men, if you are someone who fundamentally believes the education system needs to change, then run with it and just get loud and make noise that we have to get behind as parents to make that change. And we have to be giving the data to allow them to go, hey, here's the research, let's go. Because without it, they're just going to go, they're just making a bunch of noise. There's nothing to back it up.
You know what I'm also thinking is I'm thinking if we all make pressure, right, we all create pressure, we all want to see change.
Yeah.
My concern is that if somebody up top is a politician thought, we need to see change, I'm actually concerned what he's going to even fucking think of.
That's it. Yeah.
So I think, I mean, we're seeing change within the NDIS. It's all shit though,
yes,
isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Now, and that has really rocked me to a core because I just feel so, I can't even talk about it.
Yeah.
But I'm actually wondering, what do we actually want to see? Because if you're talking about putting a social worker in a school, as an example, let's say another guest is talking about professional development in schools for teachers that is paid, that is about neurodivergent people and kids.
Yeah.
I feel like if we just pick three or a few different specific key things to spend money on and somehow get that up top, because I'm concerned that creating pressure is going to get idiot and idiot putting their idiot heads together and going, we've spent $1 billion. And you know what it's on?
some fucking sporting equipment.
You are so right. Sorry, so right. This is the thing. And this is, and I say this, and I'm saying that if you are in government, hear what I say. If you are designing programs and if you are putting people in charge of ministerial cabinets like education and disability thing, family, you need to make sure that there is a lived experience and not just one random person that you accidentally spoke to, that almost the entire committee is made up of that. Because I guarantee you that their responses will be very different than Joe Blow over there, who's never worked in a classroom a day in their life, has no idea, only reads the reports and the paper and things like that. And I'm saying this, I hope some government people are listening. It needs to be lived experience. So yes, you're right. We do need to make pressure, but within making that pressure, we need to say what we want. We want our voices heard. We want lived experience on those committees making the decisions. If you have a minister, and I don't know who our Minister of Education is right now, sorry, but I hope that they're a teacher or have teaching experience, or, you know, they need to be in the classroom. I know that if I was put in as Minister of Education in a hypothetical world, I would still some way make sure that I was going into the classroom at least once a week, because that keeps me into the, you know, and as a casual, that keeps me in the thick of it, in seeing it and adapting. And something I might have gone, oh yeah, this will be a brilliant idea. And then I go and see a classroom and go, actually, this is fundamentally not going to work. So that's a hypothetical imaginary world.
But oh, no. I love it. What I think I'm going to do is I think I will put the jot form with the school's experience. And I think we had 700 people around about last time fill it in.
Yeah.
And it goes into, what is your experience? What would you like to see changed?
Yeah.
And it's collated.
There's a data point straight right there.
Yeah. So I am still figuring out where I'm going to send this. I have sent it before. I'll send it again.
Just keep going.
But let's keep building.
Yeah.
Because if we don't keep building, what is the school series fucking for?
Exactly.
Like, what is it for? We don't want to just go around in a circle and then we just continue on.
Oh, no.
So exactly. I'm going to put the jot form into the show notes. I don't know what I'm going to do with it yet. But what I do know is that someone that's listening to this or a guest, someone will know what to do with the jot form.
Yep.
And then when someone eventually says to me, hey, have you got some data? I'm going to have,
you're going to have so much data. Awesome.
So let's jump in, do the jot form. Then what I'll also do is I'll put a template about how do you complain to your regional office.
Yeah. Maybe include what the different regional offices are if you can, like that. I don't know, maybe, because it's really hard to find that information out. They don't actually make that easy, that if you want to make a complaint. So I don't know if there's a way you can streamline that process, because you're a pretty good problem.
I will do that. I'm going to make a free pack like I did with the NDIS. How to complain about your school at regional office.
Yeah.
I will make one of those because I love that stuff and I will put it into the show notes. So for anyone listening, if you would like to make a complaint about your school or you would like to add pressure, say you're not happy, please download the pack that I will have the show notes. And also one final thing before I forget, Tanya Waring, who did a school series with me back in the day before I think there was really hardly anyone listening. She said something that's always stuck with me, and she was a full-time lawyer who gave up her career to advocate for one of her children. She said to me, don't ever leave a school if you think you are pushed out.
Yes.
You get expelled and you stay there until they expel you to add to the data.
Yes, that is – oh, can I just speak on that for a second? Because this is stuff I had to research recently. So part of what I do now with my business is I advocate – I'm an educational advocate and consultant. And I have had to read some of the policies in so I can use them. Your friend is absolutely right. Do not leave that school. Because it passes the buck and it doesn't create a data point. It doesn't create, and this is the thing, it doesn't create a paper, like a proper paper trail when we are trying to check why students are being forced to leave and things like that. So yeah, your friend is 1,000% right. You stay there. And if they go, oh, well, you know, we need to drop down to an hour a day. Well, I would be needing them to back up making the decisions around an hour a day of class, because under the legislation, that's a really big thing to ask. So you need to make sure that you've seen the learning plans and you've signed the learning plans. You've seen the behaviour plans. You've had input, because I have seen that schools are now making them and not actually engaging with parents. Same with behaviour plans. So you really need to make sure you have all of that paperwork. Don't leave the schools And if you do have to leave, then that's when you've had the formal thing where you've been expelled and they have a formal document that they send you, and where the principal under what law and what part of the department policies that you come under. It's a really important document. you need to stay there. And I know it's horrible because, you know, as parents, we want to protect our children. But I'm going to say this, and I'm not trying to be cruel. If you are getting expelled from a mainstream school and then sent to another one, do you honestly think it is going to be better? Sorry, like I'm being honest. I don't, that sounds cruel. But the reality is if you are being expelled from one, you are already having that expulsion follow you, or the behavior records follow you on one school to another mainstream. So it isn't going to help you. So I would stay with the one until the very end if you can, and it is safe to do so, and your child's mental health isn't being destroyed in the process, and your own mental health isn't being destroyed in the process. And I know that a lot of schools are going to be hearing this and think, oh God, this bitch, and because a lot of them do know me, unfortunately, but this is the thing. Stay, create the data point, because I'm hoping one day in your child's future, that will be a point they will be able to call upon and go, well, actually, no, I think we may have failed this particular student, or we passed the buck, which I think a lot of schools would like to do.
I think that is a cracker point to leave on.
Yeah.
And I think we need to reduce the shame around that happening.
Yeah.
I've had a school ask me to leave before, and my response was, I will now die here.
Yep.
I'm not leaving, and neither are my children.
Yep.
So sometimes by digging your heels in, and that's just one
method.
I'm not saying that everyone should do that, but don't let the shame get you where you feel like you have to leave because they don't want you here in some way. There are so many ADHD mums that tell me they've been asked to leave, they've been pushed out, they've been shamed, and it's a way of passing the kid on.
Absolutely.
And so don't allow it to happen, because I really believe that by creating the pressure, that's where we're going to see change. And if we leave willingly and take on the load ourselves as the mother,
which we do anyway, yeah.
Even if you know you're going to remove your kid anyway, right? You're going to leave anyway. You've had enough, right? You think your kid's going to get traumatized? Just let them expel you. Just tell them that he's going to turn up.
So this is something that the schools say. So fundamentally, under the law and under the rights of a child, they have a right to an education. So if a child's behavior is unsafe, and I mean, like, if we're bringing weapons to school and things like that, fine, that's different. But that's not what we're dealing with. We are dealing with children who are, and the thing is, they're having externalizing behavior. It's communication. And I'm betting dollars to donuts that they have probably heard the narrative from their own teachers sitting in those shitty meetings with principals when they've heard the word defiant thrown around, or that they're not listening because they're not giving eye contact. So that has made them take on those labels. So if a school is, and that's the type of behavior that you are getting, then they have to, your child has a right to an education. So you're right, stay there, dig your heels in. And then I'm hoping that they will be smart enough to start going, well, okay, we might need to start looking at some other methods of engaging and that aren't just the regular narratives that we've been given. Let's look wider. What could we be doing wider? What's working elsewhere? Because they just rely on what's there.
Because we're talking about, if we're saying that the system isn't working, the people up top are going to be relying on data, expulsions, suspensions, to show that. So let's add to that.
Yes, absolutely.
If you would like to find out any more about Bronnie, I'm going to put her notes into the show notes. She has just moved into educational advocacy. Is that correct?
Yeah, education and consultancing. So I will be also working, hopefully, with schools and even daycares to be able to develop understanding around neurodivergence in a lived way, if that makes sense. Not just a this is what we say on paper sort of thing.
If you'd like to find out more about her, I'm going to put it all into the show notes. Thank you so much for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend, review the podcast, and reach out to us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Quick announcement. Did you know that we have an ADHD month shop filled with resources designed just for you? These resources are packed with answers to the most frequently asked questions I get sent in via email. Everything from understanding ADHD and autism to practical tips for daily life. There's also a free assessment tool. If you're wondering about ADHD or autism for yourself or your little one, don't forget to check out the free assessment tool under free resources section on my website, adhdmums.com.au.